to introduce our speaker for tonight, Nikki from Santa Maria.
Hi, everyone. My name's Nikki. I'm an alcoholic. Okay, so I was looking around, and it's kind of scary to me. There are probably two people in this room that were here when I got here. Two. My sobriety date is July 1st of 1989. I have a sponsor. She's present. Lucky me. And I feel very, very fortunate to be alive and here. They used to say, stay sane and sober, if you know that friend of mine. And I don't know that I always qualify for all of those things on the same day. So, but I am grateful to be here in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I won't lie to you, I was thinking about it before I came, like, you know, 15 minutes-ish, because I tried not to think about it before that. And I thought, you know, you want to come to a meeting, you want to share your experience, strength, and hope. I don't want to embarrass myself. And I would like to be somewhat entertaining, but really, I just prayed and I asked God to help me to do this. So my point today would be to share the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if I can do that successfully, then we're good. So I'm not sure what you want to start with. So I'm sorry, Steve Martin jumped in my head. So, like, I am one from an alcoholic family. I am the baby of five kids. My dad was a terrible drunk. My mother, many of you know her, is a diehard Al-Anon. And we lived in Crazy Town, really, we did. And I didn't know that our house was different or that it was crazy. I had no idea. To me, all the things that happened in our home was normal. So, like, drunken brawls, you know, men beating women, men beating kids, like, just totally crazy insanity. That was normal. And I can tell you that I watched my dad drinking alcohol. Now, you're not going to hear a big story about how everything's his fault. But really, I have to tell you, how that introduction happened, right? So he'd say, hey, go get me a beer. And I'd be like, all right. I'd go to the kitchen and get him a beer. And I would get a sip right off the top. We're talking little, like four. I don't know. He just sip the beer. That was cool, right? None of my friends got to drink beer. And I thought that was pretty nice. And then as I got a little bit older, I started seeing that the people that were my people, my dad, my mom, my relatives, were Hispanic. I know I don't look white. I mean, I know I look white. I don't look brown. But I am Hispanic. And so, like, my mom's white, all right? But my dad was not. And I didn't even know. I know it's lame, but I had no idea that I looked different until I went to school and they called me Weta for the first time. Until then, I had no idea. I thought I looked like everybody else in my family. So, needless to say, that made me different right away, too. But I watched those people, and they would drink alcohol, and they had fun, right? They had a good time, and by God, I thought that looked good. And eventually, I started wanting to join them in their fun. And I know a lot of people have a hard time relating. Now, I'm an old woman now, but when I first got here, I was just a kid. And when I started drinking, I was just a little girl. I was about 8 years old, and I started drinking for the effect produced by alcohol. And if you can relate to that, I'm sorry. And if you can't, I'm also sorry, because, you know, right from the very beginning of my start of drinking alcohol, we had a strange relationship, and I wanted to have fun. I wanted to be normal. I wanted to be like someone else, and I drank alcohol to try to make that happen. And my family moved to Santa Maria when I was about six, and what had happened was I went to my mom and dad, and I said, my cousin gives me piggyback rides without panties on. And they said, what? And so I described it for them, and I said, okay. And like a good Hispanic family, they packed up their shit, and they moved to the next town over, and nothing was ever done about that, and now we lived here. And so everybody I knew, everybody I was close to, all of that was like completely different in a day. And that actually is a really big deal, because it started a pattern for me that when anything went wrong, you pretty much packed up and moved out. Like, you just cut, run, don't look back. So we moved here. I had always been in Catholic school, and I was one of a group of siblings. And when we moved here, my siblings did not come. So it was just me and my mom and my dad and no one else that I knew. And I started at a new school, and I was just a little bitty kid in a big new fishy pond thing. And I didn't have a problem with drinking for years, but I had a problem with sitting in. I had a problem with feeling normal. I remember, and so my pitch kind of has a lot to do with feeling, so if that's not what you're into, I'm sorry. For me, I wanted to feel like other people looked. And there were these beautiful girls in my school, and they were thin, and their families had nice things, and people loved them, and I wanted to be just like them, right? But I knew that I wasn't the same as them. And I couldn't ever ask them to come to my house, because you can't drag those kids home when crazy's at home, right? So I was always like this weird oddball that didn't quite fit into the, you know, like the square peg in the round hole. Like I would be longing for friendship and longing for something else, but I couldn't figure out how to make that happen for myself. And I can tell you that there were a lot of tragedy. Like if you have an active alcoholic that's your primary people, they do crazy shit. And I remember that one day my dad just went over the edge. And he drank so much that he beat my brother until he had to go to the hospital. And I remember when we went to the hospital with him and they were caring for him, they took him to foster care. He never came home again. My dad was arrested, but they said, nah, she's okay. She can still hold her own. That's the 70s. Send her back home. She's all right. And so I lived there. But not much longer after that before I really started to make friends with alcohol, because I knew that that wasn't normal. You know, I knew that it wasn't okay to beat the dog, to beat your wife, to beat your kids, right? So eventually, I learned how to drink. And drinking did something for me. Like, I was trying to think, like, great speakers really quote this shit out of the big book, and they know the page and all that. And I was like, yeah, I want to be like that, but I'm not like that. But I can tell you that when I was looking through my big book, I was reading in the doctor's opinion, like in the very, very beginning. And there's that little section, and it talks about men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive. While they admit it's injurious, they cannot after a time differentiate the true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, and discontent. The sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once, taken for a few drinks. That's, I mean, they want to experience that again. And the truth is that's like my story. It's kind of boring. There's the whole thing. Once I figured out that alcohol can make me feel different, that's what I wanted to do. I didn't, like, I could be anyone else, right? I was trapped in a body that I didn't want to be part of and in a family that I didn't want to be part of. And all I could do was, like, obsessively think about what it would be like to be you or anyone else. And alcohol helped me to escape from terror and all that stuff. And I didn't want to put it down. When recently, I jump around. I was in a class, and they were talking. They were introducing the idea of alcoholism to students, right? And they were saying something about giving up alcohol, like, oh, giving it up. And I was sitting in a room full of strangers with 26 years sober. And when they said, you have to quit drinking, and they were talking about it, I cried. I am 26 years sober. I have a good life, and I'm happy to be sober. And I cried because the thought, the feeling of giving up drinking is terrifying, right? And if you can relate to that, you're in the right room, because that was my best friend, right? I couldn't fathom what it would be to get out of bed any given day and not hit a bottle right away. By the time I hit high school, I was drinking every single day, and I was drinking first thing in the morning, and then at break, and then at lunch, and then at break, and then when I got home, and I did that all the time, right? Because I couldn't get, it was like people have your blood alcohol level or whatever that is, right? Really, I think that if it dropped below a certain point, I just couldn't function. I just couldn't function. I had to be nipping all the time. And A lot of people didn't realize what was going on, but then eventually people start catching up. When you drink like that, you can't function as well, right? I think that's a safe generalization. So, like, I couldn't function in school. I couldn't function in friendships. I had tons of boyfriends, like, come and go and crazy, and I didn't know how to act. Like, people would say, oh, you know, act like a lady, and I thought, what are you talking about? Like, I had no idea what that was, and I got in with a group of friends that were crazy like me, and we did dumb shit. Like, if I say something and you're offended, I apologize, but to me, it was, looking back, not my best move. So I decided I didn't like the way I was being treated. The boys at school didn't like me, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I decided to do, like, angry things. So I shaved my head. I safety pinned my face. And then I really was pissed off when you acted like I was crazy and weird because I was like, fuck you. Right? Okay. But what I was always doing is making it harder and harder. I was always pushing people away because every single person I was close to either beat my ass, left me, or died. There's no way I was letting people in. That's crazy talk. So what happened for me is that every action I took was trying to push people away, but at the same exact time, I was like this ridiculously desperate person that was dying for attention and affirmation and affection. I just had no idea how to get there. So I did a lot of dumb shit, and I know a lot of people love to hear drunk logs. I don't like to give you a big drunk log because I don't really care about that shit anymore. I quit drinking for a reason. But, I mean, we did dumb shit. We would do stuff like drink all night, and then somebody would say, hey, let's have a party. That wasn't even a party yet. We'd go to somebody's house. We'd break into a house. We'd have a party at someone else's house. That always led to trouble. You know, it was always insane, and we were always jumping out of windows, running for our lives, praying to God we weren't the slowest, that way the cops caught them instead. Like, right? I didn't get in tons of trouble. So, like, a lot of people come here, and they have these horrific stories about prison. I honestly, for years, I wished that I did. I would come and listen to meetings, and I'd be like, damn, he's been in prison. That is so badass. But I didn't go, right? I just was like this garden variety, teenage drunk, nothing that serious. But eventually, I got caught in sticky situations all the time, but I never had been arrested. So if you're in a room of Alcoholics Anonymous and you're kind of new and you don't feel like you fit in because you've never been arrested, there's a lot of us that have never been arrested. We were lucky. You'll learn. That's a yet. But I never got arrested. I never had a DUI. I never had those kind of problems. But I was very fortunate because I always seemed to get out of them just in time. So I think that some of the things that were scary to me when I really started looking at my alcoholism was, like, I was babysitting my nieces and nephews, and you'll forgive me, I can have utter respect for Alcoholics Anonymous. Drugs are a little part of that story, though, so please try to forgive me. I was babysitting my sister's kids. I was about 14. She had left on a run to pick up dope in Santa Barbara, and I was in Tahoe by myself with the kids. I was not old enough to drive. I didn't, I was 14, okay? I couldn't drive. And she left the kids with me and my brother, and we were drinking, making spaghetti. I will never forget it. So we're drinking, we're making spaghetti, and my brother said, hey, I brought home stuff. It's upstairs on the thing. Hit it when you get a minute, because we used together. I went upstairs, and we were drinking beer and stuff, whatever. But I went upstairs, I hit that bong, and I don't remember 2 days. And I was the primary caregiver of these little dependent children that were like 3 and 1. And I couldn't tell you today what happened in that days that were lost. I don't say that like I'm badass now, but I felt very ashamed of that when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous because someone trusted me with their children, and I couldn't live up to that trust, and that's a big deal. I don't know about you. I have kids today. I'm trustworthy, and I don't blank out on them, and I'm there to take care of them, but when this happened, I couldn't be there to take care of them. So, you know, things happen like that. I would get in fights. I had a terrible, terrible attitude. I liked to fight and box people, thought I was cool. And I have had problems at school as a result of it, and it wasn't too terrible, but you know, a few times I'd been in trouble. I also thought, I thought I was like Martin Luther King too, so like I would start drinking or using or whatever, and then they said that they were going to move the smoking area at school, right? And I was like, no, I'm going to smoke right here, and I had this like smoking with my friends. Well, they got wise when security came and they ran. No, not me. I stayed to be arrested at school, but I mean, it didn't stick, so it was, does that count? Maybe I was arrested. I could have lied. That's funny. All right, so this whole thing goes down. They call my parents, and my parents are like, well, she's fine. Just send her home, whatever. So then what happened, the way I got here, this is the important part, is my dad was a horrible drunk, right? And my mom had been Al-Anon. I don't know. Does anybody have an Al-Anon? Anyone? No? You should get one. They're crazy, though. She went to Al-Anon, and she had learned some things while she was there. And they told her to quit drinking with her alcoholic and quit enabling him. And they gave her, like, this list of stuff that she should do. And she started enacting those those things. So then my poor dad did not see that train coming. And I didn't know the trickle-down that was going to happen either, because he was my main source. I shouldn't laugh. He had bottles hidden all over the house, and my mom would mark his bottles. So she would be like, God damn it, Nick, you've been drinking a lot, and blah, blah, blah. And I'd be like, panning off his bottles. I had to ask for forgiveness later, but he got in a lot of trouble with her. And when she decided she was going to quit drinking at the house, and then she put the ultimatum out to him, he didn't like that too well. But then that dried up my resources, so I had to get more creative about how I was getting my alcohol. And what happened is he didn't last long, right? Shit dried up at home. He didn't have a buddy. He didn't have support, right? He couldn't take it. So he went to AA, went to rehab. And they, as part of rehab, they said, your whole family has to go. And so then I got stuck going too. But I wasn't there very long before they were like, you kind of show some of these symptoms. So it was like, oh, are you kidding? So I didn't come right away. I started going to Alateen. I don't know if any of you have heard of that. But Alateen is supposed to be like Al-Anon, and it's supposed to be for the children of alcoholics. So, but what I did was I went and I hooked up with a bunch of kids who came from fucked up houses like me, and I learned to do other shit there besides what I was supposed to be learning how to do. But it helped me to hit that bottom way quicker because I was introduced. This room, this place is a huge part of my recovery. This is my home group, okay? This place. And the first time I ever smoked PCP was out in the back by the fence, and I swear to God, I kept walking around going, oh my God! I kept holding my head, telling people the wind was blowing in it, and my brain was falling out, and they were like, what are you talking about? I was crazy. So needless to say, it didn't take long before I was in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was raising my hand as a newcomer. And the ladies that were here, I say ladies because my sponsor taught me right away that I was supposed to pay attention to the ladies and not the men. So the ladies that were here when I first got here were really helpful. And I don't think they had a God dang thing in common with me. So I think sometimes newcomers come in and they look for that person that's common to them. Like, oh, we're about the same age and we have kids and we're new. I got here, I was 15. They had like gray and white hair, and they had Cadillacs and jewels and shit. I had a mohawk that was half green and safety pins, right? Like, we didn't have shit in common. And I didn't know how to talk to people. I could not cuss. I guess I'm not that much better at it now, but I was foul-mouthed. I had a bad attitude, and I was pissed off, man. Oh, my God. I would come in, they'd say hello, and I'd go, like, right? They'd go, have a seat, and I'd be like, I'll sit if I want to sit, you know, and they're like. So they would do stuff like they, back in the day, they used to do this thing where they go out to coffee afterwards, and they'd invite me, come to coffee with us, and I don't know why I went, right? That's not what I was into. I didn't even like coffee, but I was like, okay. So I got to coffee with the ladies. And I tell you about this one because she was like my hero. Her name was Jenny. Does anybody remember Jenny? Oh. So Jenny, I can't even think about her without crying. Jenny would just keep extending herself. No matter how big of an asshole I was, she would say, let's have lunch. Right? And I'd be like, oh, okay, like, how do you say no? She's like 70 and shit. Like, So then I would do stuff with her, and I listen to, like, angry, pissed off music, like Minor Threat. And, like, right? Like, that's why I had Minor Threat and Judas Priest and blaring out my windows all the time. I had a freaking attitude. But she would be like, come on, honey, come with me. And I would go with her. And I would sit in her fancy big car and look at her. And she really was a lady. And if you have something to say otherwise, I will not hear it. Because she was incredible. Her hair was done. Her makeup was done. Her nails were done. Her clothes matched. Her jewels were lovely. And she had this calm, beautiful demeanor. I could tell you funny about her too, but, and I just was attracted. You know, when they got here, they said it's a program of attraction. And mostly, I didn't get what that meant. But now, in hindsight, I saw Jenny had that, right? And I was like, I so want to be like her. And I was way far off from her, not in the same boat as her. So they were like, you know, pick a sponsor. And she was like, mm-mm. You're too sick. But she stayed my friend, and she helped me find someone that would be willing to be my sponsor. And I kept coming to meetings. And I love newcomers. God, we get well a little bit, and then we can quote the big book, and we have lots of things to tell everybody. Oh, my God. They didn't kick me out of meetings, though. They just let me keep coming back. They kept saying, that's so good to have you here. I think they got some kind of special award. I don't know. Honest to God, I don't know why they were nice, but they were. And I just kept coming back. And my sponsor said, you need to get a big book. You need to read it. And I was like, all right. So I did it because, honestly, I thought there was some kind of AA police. And if you didn't do what your sponsor told you to do, they were going to come and get you. So I was, like, not very bright. So I started reading the big book. I don't know if my age, to be honest with you, I don't know if my age had anything to do with it or just I couldn't comprehend it because my head was so cloudy. But I didn't understand what I read in Alcoholics Anonymous, okay? I didn't understand what you were telling me. You had words that I thought were crazy, like powerless. I don't think so. No. Because I had no idea. Like, that's an idea. Powerlessness is an idea, okay? But I didn't get it. So I didn't understand acceptance either. They started talking about acceptance. Whoa, didn't get that. Took like 15 years to get that, for real. Just, I didn't know what I was doing. But I kept reading the big book. I kept hitting my knees. I kept praying. I didn't have one of those when I got here. My sobriety predates cell phones, so. So, you know, I just kept doing it. But, like, she told me stuff that was cool, right? She was like, well, you know, you don't have to worry about that. Like, how she explained powerlessness to me is, like, do you ever drink and then you end up doing shit you didn't really plan on doing? And I'm like, yeah! And she said, that's powerlessness because you, and then later I learned, like, I gave up my choice. Like, I would take a drink, and then all bets were off, and I didn't know if I was going to show up at home with clothes and shoes and panties, or even home, sometimes not. And, see, I was giving up those, that I have a choice, powerlessness, that's what it meant. I didn't always know where I was going to be, or what condition I was going to be in, or how I was going to treat other people. Oh, yeah, then I could relate to powerlessness. And I did not like that whole God thing, so, you know, came to believe in a power greater than ourselves, and I was like, yeah, no, I just ignored it. And then that third step probably couldn't happen because it had a lot to do with that second one and that power thing, and I was like, nah. So I picked and choose, but I went through them, and I did them. And then finally one day I got to the point where I couldn't stand living in my skin, and I just wanted to either drink or die. And There are a few days in my recovery I can remember just as clear as glass, like just perfectly. I remember exactly where I was when I had 22 days sober and what I had to do to make it through that day. I remember it. So if anybody have 22 days? No? Yeah? Okay, well, I remember exactly what 22 days was like. And I remember when I hit a wall and it was drink or die. I remember that. Because when you get sober, you don't have anesthesia anymore, right? You know, I'm feeling shit, and I'm not real keen on it. I don't like it. I don't know what to do with it. And if I can't drink it, screw it, I don't know, make up it, I can't take it. So, like, I didn't want to be alive and in my skin, and my sponsor said, oh! But sounds like you're ready for your fourth step. And I was like, mm-mm. I've heard in the rooms, that's not good. That is not a good step. Everybody told me that's bad shit right there. And she was like, well, you didn't bring your big book. Come on over. And I was like, oh. She had this little love seat. I knew I was going to get stuck there. It was like the kids were going to be throwing cereal at me. I knew. I didn't want to go. But I was like, all right, because AA police were going to come and get me. So I was like, fine. So I showed up at her house, and she did put me at the love seat. She got me some damn paper. I didn't take anything with me because, you know, don't be prepared. And so she was like, well, I have my big book. So I worked this thing, and I started writing it. And she's like, you have to be thorough and fearless. And I was like, oh, God. So I just did it, right? I was too stupid to know to hold something back, honestly, or miserable. It might have been a combo project there. And so I thoroughly did that fourth step, and I didn't hold anything back, right? Well, kind. So then it was time to do the fifth step, and I was like, I'm done, and she's like, time for your fifth step, and I was like, oh, well, how's that going to work? And she's like, well, we're going to sit at my house like this right now, and we're going to pray, we're going to ask God to be there with us, and you're going to share your stuff you wrote down, and I was like, no way, bitch, I'm out. And she's like, no, that's what we're going to do. I go, I ain't praying, asking God to be there. Are you crazy? And she's like, do you think he missed it? And I was like, shameful. One of the hardest things I ever had to do was to do that fifth step. I've been running from those things and carrying them with me all those years, all those days, to the point where I had shaved heads, cut arms, safety pins in my face and everything else. I would do anything so I didn't have to talk about that. And now she's like, we're going to talk about it. And I was like, holy Jesus. But God bless her. She's a journal. And she said, well, kind of journal. She said, here, you come in my room. We're going to sit down. And she had her big book. And she said, well, we're going to pray and we're going to ask God to be here. And I was like, everything I could stand to do that, right? And we prayed. And then I started reading this thing, right? Well, you know, I was paranoid. No one can know about this. I'm like checking the windows. Like, you know, like nobody can hear this, man. And by the end, we're picking up our kids. I've got the book. We're reading the shit in the car. The kids are in their back seat. And she's just like, don't worry, kids. It's a fifth step. And they're like, oh, gotcha, Mom. Like, and it was done. So I share this with people because if you haven't done a fourth and fifth, this is some really seriously good shit. I'm driving home. It's late at night. It's about 2 a.m. I'm by myself. And I actually didn't have angry music then driving. And I had this weird thing, like, what is that? And I had been so disconnected from myself. I didn't even know it was happening. And it was like this bubble, like bubble, bubble. I don't mean diarrhea. I mean like bubble. And I go, what is that? And then pretty soon I'm driving and I'm laughing. I'm in my car like a crazy lunatic driving by myself laughing from the depths of my soul laughing. And do you know, it had been the first time that I had laughed like that that I can remember. Because you know what? There was nothing between you and me. And there was nothing between me and God. I didn't have anything to hide. I didn't have a reason to run. It was okay. Not to say I was forgiven and whatever. I just, for once, it was done, right? You couldn't hold any shit over me because I told Red and the AA police knew that I had done my job. And I didn't hold on to shit because at the very end, she's wise. She was like, is there anything you haven't written down? And I was like, yeah, we want to hear that too. And then I had this few extra things that I had held on to that I wasn't ever going to tell anyone as long as I breathed there. And I told them to her. And you know, I have lived in freedom of those things since that day. And that's a big damn deal. So, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous, the steps were huge. So I don't want to, like, just skip it and say, oh, yeah, I did the rest. But I kind of did. Like, I did the steps. She said I had to do the next thing. So I, you know, like, I prayed. When you get done with that really thorough fist, there's no doubt. Like, whoa, this is really, really shitty, and I don't want to carry this, and I don't want to do this again. And so it was easy to set me right up. I don't know, Bill and Bob, they were some geniuses, man. Because it just set me up right away to go through the rest of those steps to be free of all that shit. And I would love to say that I don't have character defects today, that I don't ever have that shit come up, but that would be a bold-faced lie. You know, I wasn't even fit for human relationships sober for like 10 years. And I'm not kidding. So don't be discouraged. 10 years, at least it came eventually. I was crazy, though. I couldn't make decisions in sobriety that were decent. I've always had a little trouble with relationships. So I was like a year sober. I called my sponsor. I go, I met this guy. We're going to go together. And she laughed and she said, I want you to pray about that, and then I believe that you've been sober long enough, you've been working the steps, you can make a good decision, call me back and let me know. And so I waited about a minute, and I packed my shit, and I called her from the hotel, and I was like, we totally love you, she was like, oh, damn it, I was hoping you'd do better. So the old people will know that I left, I joined the carnival with Mr. Wonderful a year sober. It was bad. But you know what? God has taught me. He has three answers, and my sponsor let me in on these three answers. This is my opinion. If you don't agree, that's okay. And it was yes, no, and if you insist. Unfortunately, I insist a lot, or used to, a lot. It'd be like, no, I love him. And then I'd be gone and beat up. That incident ended just that way. My mom came to see me. God bless my Al-Anon. She came to see me. I'm stone cold sober, but I didn't know how to function. I didn't know how to live sober, so I still did really stupid shit. So I'm living there, and she comes to see me in Hanford. I'm sorry. I refer to that place as the armpit of America. Okay? Somewhere in between Hanford and Lemoore, because if you call it Lemoore, we know you aren't from there. So between Hanford and Lemoore, and my mom came to see me, and she said, hey, mija, I bought you a bathing suit. Why don't you try this on? And she's at a hotel, because I could never take her where I lived. And she said, try this on, and we'll go for a swim. And I don't want to get graphic, but I took my clothes off, and I went to put on my bathing suit, and my mom audibly gasped. Now, I've had the look, right? We've all had the look. If you're an Alcoholics Anonymous, you've had the look. This was different. It was a gasp. And I turned, and I said, what? And she said, what happened to you? And I looked, and I'm like, what? And I had totally, if you don't believe me, that's okay. This is my truth, though. I looked in the mirror after she said that, and I had handprints all over myself. I wasn't functioning, right? So just because I got here and I got dry and I went through those motions of trying to be sober doesn't mean that I made good decisions. It doesn't mean that I was free of the alcoholic thinking that created misery for me. So I became aware for the first time that I was getting the shit knocked out of me, and that probably wasn't a good idea. But I couldn't let her win. Being a good alcoholic, I was like, no, we're fine. And I sent her home. But what happened was she planted the seed, right? She planted the seed, and then she left, and I was there by myself. And this crazy brawl happened. He dragged me down the stairs by my hair. And as I laid on the floor, I swear to you, I sound crazy, but I swear to you, it was like God said, I didn't get you sober for this. What are you doing? And I went, mm-mm, that's it. And I took, I had $3, and I put $2 in my tank, and that's back a long way. And I bought a pack of smokes, and I drove home, right? I drove home. That's for you, for $3, you're jealous. But I got back home to Alcoholics Alcoholics Anonymous. And I would like to say that Alcoholics Anonymous is always warm and loving and inviting, but instead they were mean to me. They made fun of me openly. But you know what? My sponsor said, that's okay. You did some stupid shit. Keep coming back. So I'm going to tell you too, if you're kind of new around Alcoholics Anonymous, or if you're old and you get your nose bent out of shape, we're not all here because we're saints. Some of us make bad decisions, and so you just have to practice those principles in all your affairs, shrug it off, and move ahead. Because the fact is, where would I be without Alcoholics Anonymous, right? Where would I be without this ragtag group of people? I'd be in big trouble. So, you know, I've worked the steps. They've made me employable. They have changed what I'm able to do. One of the things that was a really, really big deal when I got here is that I had no education to speak of. I mean, I managed to graduate from high school, but I didn't have anything after that. And I always felt very less than, like other people were educated and smart and they could do it, and I was too scared. So I went, I want you to get that picture, though. I was 40. I've been here since I was 15. I didn't just go, I'm going to college. I took a long time to work on myself, to do lots of practice of doing the next right thing, and right? So, like, finally, I decided I was going to go to school. And that was scary for me, because if you're a drunk like I'm a drunk, I couldn't even buy a parking permit. I pulled up to the school, and I broke out in a sweat, and I just drove back home. Like, no, I couldn't do it. So then, you know, eventually my sponsor was like, just buy the fucking permit! I'm like, oh, God, oh, right. So, like, I just would do one thing, and I would go, I have to go take the test. And she'd go, just take it. Call me when you're done. Super, on time! But fear is a son of a bitch. Because if I'm afraid, I can't function. I can't think. And I'm supposed to be in freedom, right? No. Locked into fear. So with God in that, probably not part of the deal. So I had to learn at like a lot of years sober that I'm supposed to have like a daily reliance on God. And he's going to get me through all this stuff. I learned again how to pray every day and to turn my life over. And I was like, okay, if this is what you want me to do, then you got to help me get a parking permit. Like, yeah. I'm not sure how to do this. And, like, I just did the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. So the end result of just doing the next thing is this is kind of cool. I have an AS in human services. I have an AA in liberal studies with an emphasis in behavioral sciences. And I am currently working on my bachelor's degree at a university to have a degree in sociology. That is fucking cool. You know why? Because I was stupid. I didn't think I could do it. I believed the deal of all the people that had said that. And then I made it my truth, and then I practiced it in all my affairs. So when I got here, you told me that didn't have to be my truth anymore, that I could be a new creation in this big book and in these steps, and I was going to be a new thing. God was going to help change who I was. And so he has. I'm not stupid. I didn't know that. I'm a little lame with relationships still. But I'm not stupid. That's pretty good. And, you know, I was 10 years sober before I had a child. And this I cannot talk about without crying, so you just have to bear with me. From the time I was a teeny kid, they say, what do you want to do when you grow up? And I'd say, I want to be a mommy. I had this idea of, like, and I baby dolls and Barbies and puppies and kitties. And, ooh. And I just wanted to do that. Well, you know, God was good with me, and I didn't even have that opportunity until I'd been 10 years sober, and I had my first child. He was incredible. I felt in love. I'm sorry if you can't relate to that. That's cool. But they handed me that baby, and I knew a new thing I had never known in my life, and nothing else is quite like it. And I adore that child. So he's 16 today. Aww. He's pretty incredible. And then I had two more. So I had my little girl, who's 9, and I had my son, who's 7. And they are, like, so when I first got sober, I was doing it, like, for myself, right? There's not a day go by that I don't do what I do for them. Because God gave me this incredible gift of these children, right? And I love my parents, but they didn't know how to be healthy and parent, right? So I'm not blaming them for being bad parents. I think they never woke up once and said, I'm going to jack that shit up for that kid. No, they just couldn't help it. But I, unfortunately, have learned a little bit. And so now I know there is a great responsibility of being a parent to these children because I want to do it right. Like, if I wanted to do it screwed up, what's that about? Like, I can't imagine. So I have to be an example, though. And that's where Alcoholics Anonymous comes into play. So some people may not be able to relate to this, but when I practice these principles in all of my affairs, that means with my children at home. So I have to do all of these things with them. Well, that's hard. Think about that for a second. That stuff is not a cakewalk, but I try to do the right thing, and I try to be there for them. And I don't have all the answers, but I don't lie and say I do. And, you know, there are things with my kids that bring me to my knees that Alcoholics Anonymous helps me walk through. I went through a divorce in Alcoholics Anonymous, so lots of speakers get up and they're like, I found Mr. Right. And I did, and we got a divorce. And it wasn't good, right? So then he moved on, and I was a single mom for several years, and I was doing it alone with my kids, and that's cool. A lot of people have to do that. And it was not easy. I found a new depth of despair and desperation that I hadn't had before, right? That I hit sober, which is screwed up because you can't drink that shit away. So now you gotta call your sponsor. God bless her. I called. My kids are at the park. I'm on the phone.
Yeah, Marilyn, I'm not okay.
And she's like, tell me about it. And I'm talking, I'm sobbing, and the kids are on the play structures, and I'm like, oh, my God. And she just listened, and she gave me support, which I'd not ever had outside of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I, like, walked through that divorce, and I walked through being a single parent. And now I do have another husband, and he's really wonderful, but that's... Yeah, I mean, he's nice. He's a nice guy. I like him. He's really handsome, too, which is kind of cool. I'm like, where'd you come from? You're so cute. But, you know, I always had, like, worth issues. Like, I never felt worthy. I was fat. I was ugly. I was dumb. I was all these things, right? So, like, now in my life, I really have to look at that because when I say I was fat and I was ugly and I was dumb, I have my children looking right back at me going, you're not dumb, Mom. You're not ugly. Honestly, they even go the distance and they'll say, you're not fat. But, you know, I teach them about life and how to be a human, right? And I want them to not drink alcohol because I can see what this does. And, you know, I don't have to drink today. And I would love to tell you that I got sober and not ever anything went wrong, okay? And I'll be real with you. I'm going through something right now that has been probably the hardest thing I've ever had to do. In January, my daughter came to me and she said, Mommy, my grandpa's been molesting me. And I just wanted to die. Okay? Like, this is my special God treasure, and she is good and pure and light. And I knew a new kind of anger that I didn't quite know before that day. And I can tell you that it's a testament to Alcoholics Anonymous, because in that moment, it's so easy to say, I'm going to kill him, right? But in that moment, I'm watching her, and I'm listening to her words. And in my mind, I'm saying to myself, I wouldn't do a thing that would take me from being right here for her. Mm-hmm. I want you to know, I don't know who that person is. Mm-hmm. I'm the bitter, angry, punch you in the face, light your front door on fire. That's who I am. Who's this person that's like, no? I'm going to be right here with you, and we're going to walk through this together. So I've had to learn about that, too. And see, it wasn't okay to not know the answers when I got here. It wasn't okay to look foolish or be silly. I couldn't be dumb. I couldn't. I had to know everything all the time. I had to have an answer. I had to be right. Bam. Now, I don't have the answers. I don't know about this stuff. Like, I'm learning how to do this with her. I'm learning about being a parent in a different way. And I talk about that because it may sound disconnected from Alcoholics Anonymous and recovery. I couldn't be there for this kid if I was drinking because this would be about me. I would be like, oh my God, and I'd be drinking and I'd be trying to anesthetize. And where would my kid be? Not like here at home. So I'm walking through tough stuff. If you're here in Alcoholics Anonymous and you think that life is always just going to be good because you get sober, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but it's not. They have this saying, life is in session. I hate that. My sponsors say it all the time, and I hated that. And it's true. And she used to tell me to, this too shall pass. And I hated that too, because it had some connotation like I didn't get my fucking way now. But what happened is, like, this is bearable some days and not as bearable other days. And what I have to do is suit up and show up. I have to pray. I have to do the next right thing. And when I don't know what to do, then I ask for help because I don't have all the answers. Alcoholics Anonymous taught me to be teachable. Well, how are you going to be teachable if you don't go ask a teacher for help? So now I do that. And I'm learning how to be, you know, what those things are. I went from that little girl that would be just mystified at trying to be someone else. I spent all of my time consumed with wishing I was someone else. Today, I'm learning to just be who God created me to be. I'm learning how to be sober. I'm learning how not to put something in order to make myself bearable, right? I wish that I was like one of those super entertaining speakers that had like endless drunkalog crap to share with you. But really, the message I want to share with you is there is hope. There is hope that you never have to drink again. If you don't want to, you really don't have to, right? And you get a choice today. I think that that's incredible because when I got here, I was in bondage to my old life, to my old ways, to alcohol, drugs. I was in bondage to that stuff. And today, I can be free of that, and I don't have to live like that. And if you don't want to live like that, you can make a choice anytime to not have to do that, right? And sometimes when we've been here a long time, we're still a little bit disconnected, right? We don't, maybe, we're not feeling desperate anymore. So we rest on our laurels. And it'd be easy to make judgments about me and resting on my laurels, but the people that are here in the morning know that I come to meetings, that I do the hustle. I get my kids to school, and I get my butt here. And I stay as long as I can, and then I go about the rest of my day. I am absolutely grateful. Alcoholics Anonymous gave me a life that honestly I didn't want when I got here. I had no idea what grown-ups did. I didn't want part of that. Mm-hmm. And today I can live a good life. And I'm grateful, you know. I'm grateful. We're making it one day at a time, right? So thanks for having me.
Available after the meeting, so thanks for speaking tonight. Also